niečom len piny bavíte?
拜登与习近平可能下周一举行视频峰会。美国会议员代表团结束三天访台行程。专访共和党联邦众议员坦尼，美国该重新审视一中政策。大家好，欢迎收看《美国观察》，我是文浩。两岸关系持续紧张之际，多位美国国会成员这个星期对台湾展开为期三天的访问。而日前接受美国之音专访的联邦众议员克劳迪亚·坦尼表示，他不希望台湾变成另一个香港，现在是时候重新审视美国的一中政策了。我们会在稍后的节目中带来详细报道。美国观察的节目热线已经开通，欢迎您拨打0021-202-920-4990给我们留言，分享您对节目的看法，并告诉我们您希望看到的节目内容。首先看到新闻，美国总统拜登星期四迎来上任后的第一个退伍军人节，他命令政府向遭受毒气侵袭的退伍老兵们提供更好的医治，并研究老兵们在海外服役时可能患上的疾病。美国军人多年来在伊拉克和阿富汗战区执行任务时都接触过露天燃烧坑，电子设备、汽车和人类排泄物等危险物品都是定期喷洒燃油然后焚烧，空气中便散发着有毒气体和致癌物。拜登星期四在华盛顿郊外的阿灵顿国家烈士公墓献了花圈，向美国退伍老兵致敬。他在简短的致辞中说，退伍老兵和目前正在服役的军人是这个国家的脊梁。11月11日是退伍军人节，是致敬在美军服役过的每一个人。这个节日最初叫做停战日，纪念第一次世界大战的结束。据美国媒体 Political 报道，拜登与习近平的视频会晤初步安排在11月15日，也就是下周一。报道引用的消息来源是一位不在政府任职但了解峰会安排的人士。美国商业电视频道 CNBC 周四报道说，两名消息人士透露，习近平可能会在下周举行的视频会晤上向拜登发出私人邀请，请他在明年二月参加在北京举行的冬季奥运会。报道表示，习近平的邀请对于拜登来说是一个两难的选择，拒绝可能加剧两国之间的紧张关系，而接受则会使人们对拜登向外界宣示的民主和人权立场产生质疑。拜登政府上台以来大体延续了上届政府的对华政策，双边关系持续紧张。观察人士一般认为，这次峰会如能如期举行，可能会对缓和双边关系产生一定的作用。美国白宫国家安全顾问沙利文11月11日发表讲话，驳斥了把美国视为域外国家的说法。中国宣传机构在谈及美军在南中国海进行维护自由航行行动时，经常使用域外国家这一说法，暗指美国，以挑拨东盟国家与美国的关系。沙利文明确表示，美国是印太地区的一个常驻性大国。他还表示，美国在日本、在韩国、在澳大利亚都有实质性的长期驻军。他说，那种有关美国不会长期留在亚洲应对中国崛起的说法是站不住脚的，美国将会长期留在印太地区应对中国和俄罗斯构成的威胁。但他也表示，美中的激烈竞争并不一定要变成新冷战。美国国务卿布林肯周三表示，美国还没有决定是否派运动员参加明年二月在北京举行的冬季奥运会，但政府正在与其他国家和伙伴积极磋商，并在适当时候做出宣布。布林肯说过，中国粗暴和恶意对待上百万新疆维吾尔穆斯林人是种族灭绝行为，国际社会批评中国人权记录和抵制这次冬奥会的呼声不断。在要不要以禁止派运动员参赛的方式抵制这次奥运会上，拜登政府面临压力，不过美国仍然可能会决定进行外交抵制。中南美洲国家洪都拉斯总统叶南德兹应台湾总统蔡英文的邀请，即将访问台湾， 以行动破除洪都拉斯与台湾邦交不稳的传言。洪都拉斯总统府星期四在推特上表示，叶南德兹希望感谢台湾对洪都拉斯人民提供的支援。台湾外交部也证实叶南德兹即将赴台访问，并对他的访问表示欢迎，但双方都没有公布叶南德兹访台的日期和行程等细节。洪都拉斯是台湾目前仅剩的15个邦交国之一，但是近来有一些显示其希望与北京建立关系的迹象。新冠疫情爆发以后，洪都拉斯曾通过邻国萨尔瓦多等国家向北京购买新冠疫苗。今年5月，红方还表示可能寻求在中国设立一个商业办事处，处理购买新冠疫苗等事务。美国一位联邦法官星期三推翻了德克萨斯州州长阿伯特禁止当地学校实施口罩强制令的执行。这位法官表示，阿伯特的命令违反了具有里程碑意义的1990年美国残疾人法，该法禁止因残疾而实行歧视，并规定在所有公共场所为残疾人提供便利性。这位法官说，阿伯特的禁令让那些易受新冠病毒侵害的残疾儿童面临更大的感染风险。法官的这项命令还禁止德州对实施口罩令的校区施加罚款或扣发经费。倡导组织德克萨斯残障权利针对阿伯特的政策提起了诉讼，法官就这起诉讼下达了该裁决令。美国各地有好几位保守派的州长下达了命令，禁止当地校区为防止新冠疫情扩散而实施口罩强制令。阿伯特是其中之一。学校戴口罩的议题在全美各地的支持者和反对者之间产生了激烈冲突。反对者争辩说，口罩强制令侵犯了个人自由。在两岸关系持续紧张之际，多位美国国会参众两院成员这个星期对台湾展开为期3天的访问。此次美国国会代表团的造访有别于以往，格外的低调，行程也保密到家。有关情况，我们请美国之音记者李一华为我们介绍。一华，可以听到吗？
好，这次呢，美国国会的这个联邦参众议员访问团呢，大约一行大约这个10多人哦，在星期四台湾时间当地时间的星期四晚间呢，已经结束了对台湾为期3天的访问，搭机离开台湾。那么就像您刚刚在开头的时候所提到的，这一次议员访问台湾的行程呢，全程可以说是相当的突然。那么所有的这个行程和拜会的这种活动呢，也都是低调到家了，没有任何公开的这个活动和这个发表对外的声明。那么根据各方所这个了解到的情况呢，这次参访团的议员呢，一共包括了4名的参议员和2名的众议员。那么在参议员方面呢，几乎都是所有的这个议员呢，都是以共和党人为主。那么其中包括了这个来自德克萨斯州的柯宁参议员，以及犹他州的麦克里参议员，以及这个来自爱达荷州的克拉珀参议员，以及还有最后一位这个参议员呢，则是这个来自阿拉巴马州的托波威尔参议员。那么在众议员方面呢，则是德克萨斯州的埃尔泽伊众议员。那么还有一位这个众议院的这个成员呢，目前身份还没有曝光。那么这几位议员呢，不管是从星期二抵达台湾到星期四离开台湾呢，这个所有的行程都是相当的保密，没有任何公开的拜会活动以及行程。那么根据这个台湾媒体报道呢，这个星期三的时候，这个议员代表团呢是到了台湾的总统府，与台湾总统蔡英文以及台湾的高层国安官员来进行了会晤和谈话之后呢，则是转往了台湾的国防部，与台湾军方来进行交流和对话。那么这也是美国国会议员呢首次进入这个台湾的国防部来进行讨论。那么我们就知道，现在这个从10月份开始呢，两岸的关系以及这个台湾海峡的这种军事这个紧张局势可以说是逐步的升温。那么因此呢，国会议员在这个时间点进入这个台湾国防部，与台湾军方来进行讨论呢，可以说是相当的敏感。那么预计呢，双方讨论的话题呢，可能也主要围绕在目前两岸局势紧张的这种关系状态，以及美国如何加强以及协助台湾来发展这个不对称战力的这样的讨论呢。那么在星期四呢，也就是最后一天的访问行程呢，根据媒体报道呢，这个议员团呢，则是来到了台湾的科技重城新竹来进行拜会。那么这个议员团呢，在美国在台协会台北办事处处长孙 小雅以及新竹市长林智坚的这个陪同之下呢，是参访了这个台湾的这个台积电的总部，以及台以及新竹当地的一些这个景点，包括了新竹孔庙以及这个黑蝙蝠中队陈列馆等等。那么我们也知道，美国方面呢是十分的注意这一次的目前的这个半导体产业的这个供应链的生产的这种情况，因此呢，议员参访团选择在最后一个时间点、最后一个行程选择这个参访新竹呢，也可以说是格外具有特殊的意义。那么除此之外，我们也注意到柯宁参议员呢，他是情报委员会的成员，这克拉珀参议员呢，则是银行业委员的这个资深成员。那么克拉珀参议员呢，则是这个财政委员会的资深成员。图伯威尔参议员呢，是这个军事委员会的成员。因此呢，这个整趟这个台湾之行的这个访问呢，可以说是具备了这个政治、军事和商业领域还有外交方面的这种讨论。那么我们知道，这个现在台积电呢，在全球的这个半导体产业当中举足轻重，因此呢，这个议员选择新竹来作为讨论呢，来作为参观的这个地点呢，也是值得的关注的。那么我们知道，台湾外交部呢，目前呢是没有证实任何的，而是目前是证实了这个国会访问台湾的行程。不过呢，仅表示所有的这个行程安排和规划呢，都是由这个美国在台协会台北办事处来进行协调和安排的。那么更多的细节和相关的内容呢，则会在适当的时机才会对外说明。那么在国务院，美国国务院方面呢，则表示对于这个议员访台的这个内容呢，则是交由这个柯宁办公室来进行答复。那么我们知道，在稍早的这个星期稍早的时候呢，美国五角大楼国防部方面的发言人呢，也表示了这个议员访问台湾算是相对例行性的活动。那么一切的行程和活动安排呢，都符合台湾关系法的内容。那么我们的美国之音呢，也向这个国会议员的办公室来进行了询问有关于议员访台的这个具体的细节，不过至今为止还没有收到任何的答复。问号。
一华，我们知道美国国会在台湾议题上是一直展现的高度的支持，包括最近参议院方面提出的台湾威慑法，目的就是要加强台湾抵抗中国军事侵略的威胁。可不可以给我们进一步说明一下这部法案的内容？
好的，我们知道这个月初这个由参议院外交关系委员会的首席共和党领袖李氏参议员呢，是率领了多位的重量级的这个参议员提出了台湾威慑法。那么这部法案主要的目的就是要增加台湾的防务能力。那么这次访问台湾的议员当中呢，包括了这个柯宁参议员以及克拉珀参议员呢，都是这部法案的主要这个发起人之一。那么在这一部法案当中，这个台湾威慑法呢，内容呢主要是提到了希望寻求授权这个每年呢，透过这个外国军事融资的方式，向台湾来提供20亿美元以及其他援助，来加强台湾的防务能力。那么所谓的外国军事融资呢，指的是指这个以将那个美国政府的赠款与贷款用于购买美国生产的武器和国防设备等等。那么这个台湾威慑法内容当中还特别提到了将要求修改目前这个管理主要这个对外军售的这个武器出口控制法。那么这部法案呢，台湾威慑法是要求呢，这部法案呢，进行修改，来降低了这个美国企业对台军售的这些门槛和难度，使得美国的公司能够在对台军售方面呢，来得更加的容易，使得他们呢，能够这对这个台湾来销售武器呢，更加的这个简单和容易哦。那么除此之外呢，这部法案对于针对提供台湾这个军事援助呢，也提出了一些附加条件，包括台湾方面呢，必须承诺与这个美国的军事开支进行相匹配。除此之外呢，也要求华盛顿方面和台北方面针对双方的这种长期的联合产能合作发展计划来进行讨论。那么最主要的还部分呢，还包括了这个美台方面呢，必须要增加这个更多的军事交流以及合作，包括了邀请台湾的军方人员到美国来进行受训等等。那么事实上，除了台湾威慑法之外呢，在这个月更早些时候呢，由这个另外一位共和党联邦参议员霍利，他也提出了另外一项法案，叫做武装台湾法，内容相当的类似这个台湾这个威慑法，目的也是要为了加强台湾的防务能力，来对抗来自中国的军事威胁。那么霍利参议员所提出来的这个武装台湾法呢，则是要求在国防部内部呢成立一个新的项目，叫做台湾安全援助倡议。那么每年呢，他是要求授权30亿美元到这个倡议当中来提供台湾不对发展不对称的战力，对抗中国来自中国的军事威胁。因此，我们看得出来，从这个10月初以来，中国是加大了对台湾的军事恫吓。不过呢，这样的做法并没有改变美国和台湾发展这个交流的这种趋势。 相反的可能是更加催化了美国国会要支持台湾的这样的做法。那么以上是记者所掌握到的情况，时间交还给主持人文浩。
好的，感谢易华的详细报道。美国共和党联邦众议员克劳迪亚·坦尼日前接受美国之音专访，他表示不希望看到台湾变成另一个香港，现在是时候重新审视美国的一中政策了。坦尼议员认为，台湾议题是美国自阿富汗军事行动结束后最为急迫的国际议题之一。针对中国近年来迅速崛起的军事力量，坦尼称中国不是一个假想敌，中国是美国当今的苏联。他呼吁两党和行政部门共同支持他提出的中国观察法。这部法案将为国务院提供资源，监测中国在全球的影响力。下面请看专访的详细内容。
Thank you very much, Congresswoman Tani, for speaking with Voice of America. I want to start by the legislation you recently introduced, China Watcher Act. It's a bill aims to monitor China's influence worldwide. Can you tell us a little bit more about this legislation, and why do you think it's so important to counter China's influence in foreign countries?
Yeah, we obviously, it was very important for me to come out with something like the China Watcher Program, which actually creates...a department in the Department of State to monitor China's malignant activities around the world, economically, politically, and militarily against American allies, and they're just their influence, particularly the People's Republic of China, the Communist Party, were concerned about their influence in, across all regions, particularly, obviously, their recent actions that are aggressive against Taiwan and Taiwan's airspace, with numerous flights that have been recorded.And appearing to have aggressive action, and we want to make sure that the 1979 agreement is respected and that not breached by China. And I think it's up to America to stand up, but we also have to be protecting our allies' interests around the world, and that's why we put forth the China Watcher Bill. The bill is co-sponsored by the ranker, Congressman McCall from Texas. We also have bipartisan support, Dean Phillips, and also.Albio Ceres are sponsoring it, and obviously we have support across bipartisan members in the Foreign Affairs Committee. So we are very hopeful that this will be something that will be passed into law.
We're also aware that the State Department reportedly plans to expand the number of officials dedicated to monitor China. Do you see a sense of urgency from across the aisle on this issue?
Well, I think some members, especially those on the Foreign Affairs Committee, those who are dealing with the trade issues, are more sensitive to the aggressive actions that China's taking. I do think there should be some urgency and projection of strength by the administration, which is why I hope they adopt my China Watcher Bill and create this special program within the Department of State to bolster the projection that, you know, that we are...strongly going after China. We are definitely going to be monitoring their activities throughout the world. Economically, we know China is pushing their Belt and Road Initiative throughout the world. They're leveraging their great financial and economic strength, military strength across the regions of the world, and we want to make sure that we're on top of that, that we don't lose ground to them. And it's just particularly concerning with Taiwan being so critically importantin that region of the world, and making sure that China doesn't become the great hegemon in that region and have complete domination beyond Taiwan into the rest of the, you know, the South Asian seas.
Now let's talk about Taiwan. Since October, China has been stepping up its military activities near Taiwan. Now it's easy to see that that becomes a flashpoint potentially between the U.S. and China. Do you think it's time to review or change our One China policy?
Well, you know, obviously, I feel like Taiwan has been put in an unfortunate situation by China and that it's time for the U.S. to act. After what we witnessed in Hong Kong, I think it's time to revisit the One China policy. I think it's time to remember that we are the country that's the beacon of hope for democratic principles, for freedom, and the fact that China has clamped down and stifled the efforts in Hong Kong, I don't wantTaiwan to be a Hong Kong. And so revisiting the One China policy is something I think we really need to do, because China is not living up. And I see China in a general sense, meaning the People's Republic of China, Xi Jinping, they are not living up to their end of the bargain. And this is supposed to be, their support of this, the whole reason for that 1979 agreement was to be able to create these open economic channels, our support militarily of Taiwan. And so China seems to be overly aggressive and really testing the United States on that policy. So I feel like right now is a time to definitely revisit it. And I think Taiwan, this Taiwan situation, particularly coming to head right now in response to what happened in Afghanistan, I think that we want to make sure that the administration stands up, which is why I think my China Watcher bill is so important right now. I think the administration could gain a lot of strength from it, and I think it would be important in a very bipartisan way for us to show that we stand up for democracies and we stand with Taiwan. And I think now more than ever, we need to show that, and it needs to be shown on the presidential level as well and through the State Department.
President Biden said that the U.S. will come to Taiwan's defense if China invaded, although State Department say there's no change in U.S. position. And now we have the confirmation from the president of Taiwan that there are Marine boots on the ground in Taiwan. Some people, including members of Congress, have called for an end to the policy of strategic ambiguity with regard to Taiwan. How do you think the U.S. can most effectively send a signal to Beijing and deter China's aggression towards Taiwan?
Well, obviously, we can assist Taiwan, as we promised, militarily, with cyber assistance, with missiles, with help in the Taiwan Strait in terms of having some type of mine system there and to keep China at bay. I think we need to do that. We need to be aggressive. I think now is not the time to back off. China is testing us. I think that's what all those, there's almost 200 missions now have been flown. It's 160 to 200, somewhere in that range. I don't know as of today's date. Now more than ever, we need to project the strength and we need to stand by it. We can't just talk about it. We need to act. And helping militarily, I think, sends a message. We know Taiwan needs our assistance. They do not have the military strength of China. China has one of the strongest navies in the world right now. And obviously with the new carriers coming out and a lot of the equipment that they're showcasing, to show strength, I think the United States needs to now show China that we are going to stand with Taiwan, and doing that with bolstering our military support, again, as I indicated, also helping in any economic relationship and our partnership with them, with trade and other, other critical areas where we are in partnership with Taiwan.
Let's take a broader picture at Chinese military development. General Mark Milley, Chairman of Joint Chief of Staff, called China's recent hypersonic weapon test very concerning and very close to a Sputnik moment. China has pushed back his comments and say the U.S. should stop framing China as an imaginary enemy. What's your response to that?
Yeah, well, it's first of all, we should not have not known about the hypersonic missile and only learning of it, particularly General Milley, from a press release put out by the Chinese Communist Party. That being said, China is the biggest and most significant enemy, I should say enemy, let me hedge the words, competitor, as the president would say, to the United States. But in a sense, they are our biggest problem. They are today's Soviet Union to the United States. And as long as we do not continue to treat them that way, I think China is going to continue to be aggressive, and they're going to continue to leverage their Belt and Road Initiative in other countries, providing infrastructure and other ways where these countries just have no other opportunities, economic opportunities, other than to comply with the Chinese will. And so I really am, strongly believe that we need to deal with China as if it's the Soviet Union. The days of Ronald Reagan and Pope John Paul II and Margaret Thatcher standing up to the Soviet Union is what brought it down. I think we need to knock China back a few pegs by letting them understand they're not an imaginary beast out there. They're for real, and they are very serious about pursuing those means across the world. They project themselves in every corner of the earth, and they have a mission. They have a strategy to become the world's dominant leader, and they are not hesitating to move into that realm. And they're not, I almost worry that if we don't act more quickly, they will get there sooner than projected.
Our last question, how would you define or describe the future relationship between the U.S. and China moving forward? What concerns you the most?
I think the lack of human rights, their willingness to show complete disregard for their own people and for allies around the world, and their willingness to move into communities and other countries just for their own gain and not for the benefit of the world. As the United States, we've always been sort of altruistic in our foreign relations. The Chinese are very singular-minded. They're about, world dominance, being the world hegemon. And I'm concerned that the United States has a naive view of what China's interests are. And as I alluded to earlier, I think the president's naive view about them just being a competitor, where they have an unfair advantage, where they have a history of stealing intellectual property from us. They unleashed a virus on the world that killed millions of people, including over 700,000 American citizens right here in the United States, and yet feel no need to be accountable. Their influence on the World Health Organizations and on other international organizations concerns me. Their largest polluter in the world with no real interest. I mean, where are they at the COP conference right now talking about what they're doing? I think it's concerning. And I think we need to treat them as the risk they are to the world and not a leader that we want to follow, an authoritarian regime with a bad human rights effort and with, you know, without really good intentions of seeking power. It's power for the sake of being in power. And I'm concerned about our allies. And again, I cannot overstate how concerned I am about the condition in Taiwan now and how important it is for the United States to stand up on the Taiwan issue. It is really serious, and it is going to be a defining moment in U.S. foreign policy, again, after Afghanistan. So I'm hoping the Biden administration follows through, as I said, with our China Watcher program and a lot of the initiatives we're putting through on the Foreign Affairs Committee, and we let China know that we're serious about maintaining world order and maintaining a rules-based order that they do not respect in any way around the world.
Thank you so much, Congresswoman Tani.
Thank you. Thank you.
一个世纪前，科学家居里夫人首次访问美国，在白宫收到了一克放射性元素镭，而对这种元素的研究是开发人类治疗癌症方法的关键。由于美国记者玛丽·梅洛尼长期关注居里的研究，在她的努力下，这次旅行成为可能。100年后，他们的后代重新审视了这段改变科学史进程的友谊。
Curie didn't usually take interviews, but for some reason she took this one. And after seeing the conditions that Marie Curie had to work in and her lack of resources, Mrs. William Brown Maloney asked her what she could most use in her lab, and she said a gram of radium. And so Mrs. William Brown Maloney promised her that she would go back to the USA and raise the money to buy her one.
C'est quand même resté un voyage important dans la mémoire familiale, ce qui est suffisamment important pour qu'on en discute de temps en temps. Et c'est un voyage et enfin une amitié entre Marie Mélonet et Marie Curie qui est, enfin pour moi, qui est particulièrement importante parce que ça donne un sens au-delà de Marie Curie, la grande scientifique, la deux prix Nobel, dont on voit toujours la figure un petit peu sombre, triste, etc. En fait, ça la rend humaine. Car elle avait des amis. Et en fait, Marie Mélonet...
Les appareils de radiothérapie d'aujourd'hui, c'est directement issu des travaux de Marie Curie qui a découvert la radioactivité alors que personne ne savait. Marie Curie, elle a utilisé des pierres, 2 tonnes de pierres pour extraire 1 gramme de radium. Donc ça a été un travail titanesque pour une petite dame qui n'était quand même pas une travailleuse de force.
以上就是美国观察的全部内容，感谢您的收看，我们下次节目再见。